He's starting already.
Oh, no.
Last year, he made us put a Festivus pole on the table.
And he's going to make you do it again this year.
Well, I don't see one yet.
He has to supply the Bud Light cans. That's the appropriate traditional material.
Is it?
Yeah. And they have to be empty, which means he has to...
Why can't it be Coors Light? Bud Light is so awful.
No, it has to be a cheap light beer. How about that?
But you have to make him drink them.
Okay, that's entertainment value.
Yes. Absolutely.
Barf water.
Yeah.
Barf water.
Barf water.
Bleh.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Cash is here.
There you go.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, I'm Mark Reisner, president of the American Stamp Dealers Association, and you are listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's a to send up. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 51. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Don, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today, and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Or you can call us and leave a message at country code 1-949-873-4298. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news. Finally, Charlie Brown succeeds at something. Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag Halloween haunts. And our expert topic of the week is the second scariest one we have ever attempted. Recommendations for selling stamps on eBay.
Oh, the horror!
So stamp news, finally Charlie Brown succeeds at something. Press sheets for a recent A Charlie Brown Christmas issue have sold out as of October 21, a short 3 weeks after the first day of sale, which is very suspicious.
Mm.
But they only offered 500 press sheets with die cuts and 1,500 press sheets without die cuts. When the stamps were issued October the 1st, each press sheet consisted of 160 stamps, formatted as 8 double-sided panes of 20 and sold for $78.40.
So somebody walked up with a $90,000 check and bought the issue?
No, I don't think so. They're selling on eBay for anywhere from about $13 to $16 for a single pane. So.
Oh, so everybody just got them and chopped them up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a popular topic.
It's the same thing that's been going on with other press sheets, but this time... Unlike the 2015 Civil War issue, somebody didn't come in and buy the whole issue.
Well, the other interesting thing is that we got the Scott's catalog, the 2016 Scott's catalog, and most of these have a premium of only about 50%. I thought it would be higher.
It's maybe 50 to 100% over the depending on the issue, how popular the issue was. But yeah, there's almost no premium. And the only one I could find that was out of line was the 2015 Civil War sheet, and that had a dash for the value because it was speculative.
Yeah.
Somebody like I said, somebody bought the entire issue.
And just to reiterate, the 50% is off the face value. So, you know, it's an extra quarter. It's an extra 25 cents to the stamp.
Yeah.
So it's like, eh.
Well, that and there's a movie coming out this year.
Well, yeah. The Charlie Brown is cross-topic.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get cross-topic, you get very, very popular stamps.
So Christmas / cartoon / comic books.
/ Charlie Brown.
/ the movie coming out in a month. Yeah. /
Yeah, I went. You know, when I realized they'd sold out, and I went on eBay to try and get one, and there were a couple sellers that had the full press sheet available, but I didn't want to spend quite that much money. I would have bought it for face value, but I didn't want to spend a little over. It was probably about 2.5 times face. I didn't want to spend that for all of those stamps, so I just bought a sheet, and I think I paid. And I had my choice of sellers. And I picked one that had a picture of a really nicely cut one, which, you know, if you're a seller, you really got to pay attention to that.
So the regular issue stamps featuring the scenes from the 1965 television special A Charlie Brown Christmas were released on October the 1st of this year. The Postal Service ordered an initial printing of 500 million stamps. The individual double-sided panes with 20 with 10 different designs are still available at local post offices and from the USPS online store.
But they are going fast.
Well, yeah,
yes. Are you getting
I picked up a couple of sheets when I was at SESCAL a few weeks ago. But they are selling out quickly. It's a popular topic.
I bought too many press sheets. I'm cutting mine up for postage. But, you know, I'm keeping a couple. Like, I have the Imperf Elvis and a couple of those. But the rest of them, I'm kind of cutting them up.
Yeah.
From a speculation standpoint, yes, they are cool. And all my customers who get mail from me, they'll get cool Imperf press sheet stamps. But otherwise, yeah, it was a speculation that, you know, paid off a little bit.
Okay, so our hashtag stamp stories. I want to bring up the 1996 classic movie Monster stamps, which is the closest I could find to the scariest Halloween stamp the USPS has ever issued. Everything else was kind of cartoony, like jack-o'-lanterns and witches on broomsticks, and there wasn't really a story there.
Well, there's one for the Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I think it's a 13-cent stamp. It shows the Headless Horseman.
8-cent.
That one's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's one of the better looking ones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we had a hard time finding anything that didn't look like it was a cartoon trying to find scary stamps.
Yeah, these are the ghoulish looking ones with France, the most detail.
France has kind of a cool set. They did a couple, but it's so-so. Oh, and they were... I don't know how this would work. I didn't understand what the article said. It said they were not printed by the French post office, but they were valid for postage.
In France.
So was that like their equivalent of like print your own postage kind of thing, do you think, maybe?
I don't know what stamps you're talking about, but, you know, if you can make it, if you can make a French stamp, not France, then it obviously increases its appeal.
That's true.
So this 1996 sheet features Phantom of the Opera, one of my favorites, the original and the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, Dracula, Frankenstein's Monster, The Mummy, and The Wolfman.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your favorite Halloween stamp on at Stampshow Here Today on Facebook or at Stampshow HT on Twitter. Hashtag Stamp Stories, hashtag Halloween Haunts. Now, do you guys have any favorites out of the series that scared you as a child?
Well, you know, I have a comment on the classic movie monsters. Did you know that there are hidden images in those stamps?
What?
Say what?
Yeah, for a very short time, the Postal Service put hidden images in some of their stamps. And, like, the Dracula one has bats.
Like little like Easter eggs?
And they sold a decoder, which is a special plastic lens that you put on top of the stamp, and it allows you to see the images.
Cool.
I mean, you can see them if you get the if you tilt it and get angled lighting just right. You can kind of see them. But with the decoder, you can just see them in regular lighting. And it's kind of neat. It was something that they tried to try and get people more interested in stamps, but I guess it didn't really catch on. But I thought it was really kind
of
cute.
So that's where did you find this decoder? In the bottom of a cereal box?
No. No, actually, at the time that came out, I was buying just about everything out of their quarterly ordering magazine.
U.S. Philatelics?
Yeah, the USA Philatelic. Yeah. I would get it, and I would pretty much order everything. Because I was still collecting new issues that way at the time, and it was easier to do it that way. But it just kind of got a little too expensive, so I kind of quit. And now I wish I hadn't quit, but at the same time, kind of glad I did because I saved a whole bunch of money.
And I'm sure so is your other half.
Because now I can pick up a lot of those sheets at Underface.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to Cash's corrections.
Well, first of all, this is something that I kind of just found out is there is a big trend on YouTube about boxing videos.
Oh, yes.
Where you remove stuff from boxes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So technically, when we opened the C3A envelope.
Uninverted.
Uninverted C3A envelope on the video channel. Check it out, everybody. There's a little trick to knowing if there's one in there. That was a boxing video. So we have fallen unknowingly into that trend.
We should have done that for the Star Wars stamps.
Yeah. The second thing, mentioning the Star Wars stamps, I got our Star Wars stamps today.
From Royal Mail.
Yeah. Incredibly, incredibly cool stamps.
They're freaking awesome.
Very well done. Very well done. And the presentation package is quite impressive as well. The graphics are just amazing.
And they're in little split mount strips of six, and then the souvenir sheet. Really, really well done. Congratulations, British Post Office.
U.S. Postal Service, take note on how to package your stamps and market them.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Dare I bring up the French ones?
And the centering is awesome. Yeah. The centering is really good on these, even though they have tight margins.
Yeah.
Not a single one of them has perforations into the design.
But the funny thing about the French ones, I go on a blog site called Stamp Boards? Stamp Boards. And I wanted to show picture because people said, French Star Wars stamps, what are you talking about? So I wanted to put up some pictures. I cannot find pictures anywhere on the internet for the French. I even went to the French post office.
The article's in French.
That's like
probably.
That's like doing
I'll
a Google search for
again.
French military victories. They don't exist.
So, you know, people, yes, France did put out Star Wars stamps, and yes, they are, on a scale of 1 to 10, they are solid ones.
I was going to say negative 2, but okay. You're giving them a little bit of credit.
Well, one person could only imagine. Two people, I guess, could discuss it.
You didn't even get to the punchline. Oops.
Okay, so our Facebook super user, I guess we'll call him Marcel Sleeker, said his scariest stamp isn't actually a Halloween stamp. It's a Turkish stamp with an opera singer on it, which is the scariest stamp ever. I don't know how to describe it other than it looks like
a zombie howling at the moon.
Einstein zombie.
It looks like somebody scared Albert Einstein and caught him with his mouth open screaming. That's really what it looks like.
I was thinking more Barbara Bush.
Oh. It is a lady. Yeah. You're close. Oh,
it's a girl?
Hold on, is that a lady?
Oh my God. It's a woman.
Oh, man. Wow.
So her name is, I'll spell it out, NZYZINTEVRKKOLAYLS.
Oh, I should have known. That's clearly a female name.
Isn't it, though?
I don't even know how to begin to say that.
I would say you and your Polish spellings, but that's even worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't even tell you how to look this up other than it's Turkish. It's from 1991, apparently. And so go look up that year, and it's creepy. It's really creepy.
Okay, so our expert topic of the week, which we're moving quickly to because it's a big one, selling stamps on eBay. This week's topic is probably the second scariest topic we've ever tackled. Instead of buying stamps on eBay, we are turning the tables to talk about selling stamps on eBay. It is quite common that once you get comfortable buying stamps on eBay, that you get that first 50 or so feedback under your belt, that the buyers suddenly start considering selling a few extra items here and there to help feed the habit. It seems incredibly daunting at first. When you first hit the sell button, the menus are complicated. You have to come up with an encyclopedia of info on what you want to sell. And then it comes down to that all-important question, how the heck am I going to get paid, and what's it going to cost me? We are here to help you tackle this Herculean task. While a lot of points we will make will be echoes of some of what we talked about in our last episode, it will all be from the perspective of the seller, and you will learn the ins and outs of selling on eBay, as well as the many tips you might have not have known before. So Jeff, take it from here.
Okay, so yes, this is a lot of information. In fact, there's quite so much of it that we're going to go ahead and post this step-by-step on our website. You'll find this in our show notes if you really want to go through every single little line. We're going to go ahead and go over some of the highlights. This is the way we're going to talk about it. We're going to kind of assume that you understand, if you've been doing a little bit of buying on eBay, how creating an account works, and the process of actually starting to list an item is pretty self-explanatory. They did a good job of showing you what steps to follow and what information that you need to get to put in. We're just going to go ahead and go over some of the more important ones that can really seem to make or break an auction. So the first one we're going to talk about is the things you're going to need on the listing screen that are going to be incredibly important. The first one is the title. So the title is what you're going to come up with as a short, to-the-point description of the item. You have 80 characters maximum, so that includes every single space or period that you want to type in there. You want to figure out exactly what you're going to call your item. Be incredibly specific. You don't want to be vague with it at all. We'll talk a little more about that later, too.
Remember, in the search part, this is very important because a lot of people search by the title only. So you kind of want to hit your keywords in the title. And you got to make it really tight. Now, you can search, but you are allowed to search by title and description. But I believe the default is to search the titles only initially.
Yeah.
And you have to check a box to search with the descriptions as well. So that title, 80 characters maximum, is very important. You want to try and explain as much about your item as you can in as few words as you can, but you want to make it so that, because you've been buying on eBay, so you kind of know how you're searching for stuff. So those are the kinds of things that, well, if I was looking for this item, what would I be typing in?
Well, here are some mistakes people make. Let's start with just the mistakes. We're going to talk only about stamps. If you're listing Chinese pottery or something, you know, you're on your own. But and again, just to give our feedback, the people at this table have been selling on eBay for a long time. We have very, very high ratings. I personally have been on almost from the very beginning. I've seen it all. One thing, always put down the country in the stamp description. If it's from India, put down India, Canada, whatever. Even though you're listing Canada in a Canada category, and it will be obvious because you will be looking for this stamp in a Canada category, you want to put the word Canada there because people will do global searches. I see a lot of times where people do not do this, and they will lose customers.
Well, yeah, you open up eBay to your sign-in page, and you go right for the search box at the top. And if you don't choose a category over after you type in your search words, if you don't choose a category over on the right, it's going to do a global search, and it's going to search every category.
That's important because, you got to realize that U.S. has a stamp number 200 in the catalog. Canada has a stamp number 200 in the catalog. So does India. So does China, et cetera, ad infinitum. So if you don't include your country name, you are probably going to get gypped out of a purchase because nobody's ever going to be able to nail down what it is you're selling.
Well, here's another reason. You will have people go to your website because they like your service. And they will click see sellers other lots. And they will pull up every single lot. And then if they are a Canada, let's say you list half the stamps are United States and half the stamps are Canada. Well, when they do pull up the dealer search, they're going to be sort of mixed together. They're going to be in order by price or whatever, the age of the listing or whatever. you want to have that name there because they're going to go through and they're going to look at your Canada listings. It's very important to realize that people are going to look for you specifically with time. They're going to see what you have and they're going to click. They're going to try to find more stuff to save on postage. They're going to say, well, if this guy has Canada number 44s, maybe he has number 45s, and do the searches. Very important for a number of reasons. Always put the name of the country. The second thing is put down which catalog you're using just briefly, like SC for Scott, Zum, Z-U-M for Zumstein, MI for Michelle, stuff like that. That will make it much better for people who are going to be searching for you because they'll look, and generally speaking, everybody uses the same. I mean, if you, for Michelle, if you use M-I-C-H, everybody's not going to find you in the search. So find out that what the catalog used. There's probably, 10 or 12 catalogs that people use. Find out what they are. If you're selling stamps of Canada, they use Scott numbers, but, there may be another catalog that they're using, like when you get into revenues and back of the book. The third thing is putting down the value. The catalog value.
Good point.
Now, this is a two-edged sword. If you are selling a crappy, damaged $1,000 stamp and you want to get $50 for it, put down the catalog value. But if you have a fantastic, gorgeous $50 stamp and you want $75 for it, maybe a question whether you put the catalog value or not, because you put the catalog value up at $50, you're asking $75. You're asking for people to say, hey, he's trying to rip me off. Even though the stamp is clearly worth it because of increased value, because of the condition, 50% of the people are going to say, no, that stamp has a catalog value of $50.
What are you trying to pull?
Exactly. And the third one is to know the key phrases. Like, we work here with grading. So there's a lot of people who do a search for PSE. Or they'll put PSE grade 100 or grade 100 or something like that.
Gem 100.
Gem 100. But they wouldn't really do a search for gem.
Mm-hmm.
They could do a search for superb. Mm-hmm. So you get used to what the common words are.
Mint never hinged. You just abbreviate down to mint NH.
Right, right.
That kind of thing.
Or MNH.
MNH, yeah. That's another common one that I've seen.
But you also have to realize that in other countries, particularly in Europe, it's a mint unmounted.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mint unmounted. Yeah, that's all the things you got to keep in mind. My two that I would recommend for your title also is don't ever do anything that would be considered spammy or unnecessary. I've seen sellers put lot numbers in the item description, and that's just, it can add confusion sometimes. Some of them it makes sense, some of them it doesn't.
Well, yeah, because if you're searching for a Scott number 99 and the seller has item, it has his inventory number as 99-431,
yeah,
it's going to pull that up. And it might be some motorcycle part. You don't want that.
Well, again, that's old-timey. The people used to do that so they can find where they stored their items.
Yeah.
And that's kind of gone nowadays. You still see some of the people out there doing it who just don't have a good accounting system.
Well, sometimes you'll see it in the – and where that belongs, if at all, would be in the description – in the large description area, not in the title area.
Yeah, but you when you get your payment from PayPal, you get the title. You don't get the description.
Right.
And so people who want to sort of – you have 100 glass scenes in a box, and you number them 1 to 100, and you sold glass scene number 98. So you put in the title lot 98. Well, that allows you to find it, but it also takes up several of your characters that you could use to describe something else, and it throws off the search for people, and like I said, it kind of shows that you're old-timey, not really up with it.
Well, that's why I said if you put it in the description, then when you sell it, you just pull up the lot description. You go, oh, I know which glass scene it's in. It's not going to show up in your seller record, but it's also not going to show up in your – it's in the in the description, yeah. and you can find it better.
And then on spam, it's a couple of reasons to avoid it. First off, as a buyer, it just pisses me off. And I see it all the time. People will use things. They're trying to sell something obscure, so they'll put something popular in with there that's unrelated that they're not really selling. Not only is that annoying, but it's also something that if it gets reported can cause your listing to be pulled by eBay.
Yes.
So that's definitely something that you want to avoid. One more little hint for the title too. It's been proven statistically that putting your title in all caps makes it physically look longer, it's more attention-grabbing, and it's seen faster by people browsing through a list when they've typed in something they're searching for and they see 2,000 items in the list. It grabs the buyer's attention just a little bit better and gives you just a little bit more of an edge. So that's something that we always try to do. And if for some reason also you have a title that you just cannot chop down, maybe it's a unique item, maybe it's got some crazy series of cancels, and it's not going to fit in that 80-character thing, you can purchase a subtitle
for
50 cents. It's 55 characters. Yeah. Well, if it's a $500 item and you need the space to describe something unique, I'm not saying for a $2 item, that's worthless. But if it's something truly special and the price is worth it, it can help because those terms will come up when somebody puts that in to the search box.
Another thing, don't put smiley face, asterisks, hashtag, smiley face, all that junk. It wastes space and it just flags you as a noob.
It looks childish. Just keep it to letters and numbers. You don't really have to put anything else in there.
It's not eye grabbing, it's eye averting.
There's also a logical reason that can cause a problem. Let's say you're trying to be perfect in your description and you say Scott Catalog and then the hashtag symbol and then 1130. If you don't leave a space between the hashtag and the 1130, when somebody as a buyer goes to search for Scott Stamp 1130, because that hashtag symbol is attached to it, it goes from that point and not just the numbers, and it will skip your listing.
That's a good point. You also want to separate your catalog identification, like SC for Scott or SG for Stanley Gibbons. You want to separate that by a space from your catalog number itself as well.
Okay, so the next little thing we'll talk about on the screen that you see when you're listing an item is categories. Why are these things important? How are they helpful? The first one that you go to pick is actually required by eBay. You have to stick your item somewhere. There's no way around it. You can buy a second category, but it better be something special because it doubles all your insertion fees when you add a second category to it.
I've done that because sometimes I'll have a philatelic item that'll have appeal to, say, maybe the sports community or something, where I have a cover, but it was signed by an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working that now. I have a cover that's signed by Willie Shoemaker. And it's on a cover with a horse racing stamp, a 10-cent horse racing stamp. And so I kind of want to put it in a philatelic category, but at the same time, it really belongs in the sports memorabilia category with autographs and things like that. So you kind of got to wait, well, who do you think is going to buy it? Who's going to be interested? And really, you need to think who's going to be interested more first. And I think it would appeal more to a sports person than a stamp person initially, but you don't want to cut yourself off if you think it might be a close choice there between who might want it. So it's something to consider, but you don't want to do it for every item either.
And there's a couple of things that make it where that's not so painful. I mean, eBay grants every seller every month a certain amount of listings where the insertion fees are free. So
if you buy a store.
Double free is still free.
No, I think
the first 50 for anybody, I think is free right now.
Yeah, oh, it is?
I just looked it up.
Yeah.
And then, if you buy a store, you get more perks like that. You can pay a flat $20 a month, and you get so many insertion fees for free, and you get extra little goodies. Yeah, we personally didn't sell quite enough to be worth it. And, you know, we maybe sold 20 things a month versus, you know, Cash, if he sells 1,000 things a month, that could definitely be worth it.
I have the highest level store. I pay, I think, $199 a month.
And for Cash, paying that much, it means something. You guys, seriously, listen.
And then again, the fact that it says that it doubles your insertion fees is not that your insertion fees are ever really going to be that high, even if you have to pay for it. It's going to be like $0.80. So doubling $0.80 for a second category isn't going to be an earth-shattering thing if it's something, as Scott said, definitely has a very strong secondary market other than where you're intending on selling
it. Well, because I have the highest level of store, I pay $0.10.
Oh, well, look at you.
I still don't list double categories because, again, I'm not looking at just one item. I'm looking at, you know, I might have 2,000 to 3,000 lots up at any time. And 10 cents extra.
That's $200 or $300.
You're into real money, yeah.
That really adds up. So, yeah, just be a good judge of how you can use those categories. Make sure the first one's in the right place, and you can evaluate if you're going to use the second one or not.
Here's one that I'm going to advise people to break the rules. They have categories for, like, duck stamps and possessions and things like that. Well, I always put my – I don't put my duck stamps in the subtopic back of the book, subtopic revenues or subtopic duck stamps. I put it in mint 1900 to 1940.
Oh, yeah.
More people will see it. You have more of a chance of selling it. Hmm. Now, there's sometimes – in Hawaii, I do the same thing. It, you know, it's usually used, so I'll put it in used U.S. 18th century. I will rarely put things in the really small subcategories. I know that it makes it really easy for people to look for Hawaii, but I find that the people who look for Hawaii in the Hawaii category are less than the people who look for just general U.S. And I want as many eyeballs on my stamp as possible.
Absolutely.
So eBay doesn't like it. You'll probably get emails from people saying, hey, you put your duck stamps in the mint category. You should be in the duck category. You shake your head, say thank you very much, and then sell your item much, much quicker because it's not in the duck category.
I just got schooled.
Yep. Okay, so the next important part is the description. Now, this is not actually the big item specifics box where everybody, all the fancy people post their HTML. This is a short section, 1,000 characters maximum, and this is where you would put the very succinct, precise details of the item. This is where you would say that it is mint, never hinged. You might state if it's got a fault. You might put that there in just a couple of words description. It makes for fast search. The main big description comes later on. This is just for quick browsing at this point.
I find it to be totally useless.
So, exactly. If you use it.
I generally have it auto-filled with C images because when you look at a listing, it's right up there underneath the title.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the listing, it's one of the first things you see when it says C images. Oh, okay. I'll look to the left of the screen and look at all of the images, not just the one that's showing.
Yeah, my title is going to say U.S. number 3350. Mint never hinged. I do not need another little tag underneath it saying never hinged.
I think it really is redundant from other categories like clothing, for instance. You're going to sell a shirt. Well, that's where you'd put that it's XL new with tags.
Well, no, actually where you would put that, what you would put that is see below, pick your size.
Mm-hmm.
Because eBay under the clothing thing, and again, eBay is competing with Amazon.com. So they want to make it really easy for people to buy stuff. And they have done massive changes to the way clothing is listed. Before it was, you know, if you had an XL 13 shirt and the exact same thing in XL 12, you would do two listings.
Mm-hmm.
Now you do one listing and you put a check mark in which one you want. I mean, it is massively better. But it has nothing to do with stamp collecting.
No, it does not. And again, it's just I think it's probably just a redundancy from something else somewhere that we don't care about.
Well, eBay used to be, and not that long ago, like 2007, 2006, if you looked at the stock market, and again, stocks drive this company. If you look at the stock market reports, they would talk about how many listings they would have. And so they'd show 25% increase in listings. All of a sudden, their stock value goes up. Now, they're not so much into it how many listings are up. They really don't care how many listings are up. They care what's selling. Mm-hmm. And so it happened about 5 or 6 years ago. They made a really, really big change. where they don't care how many items are up. And as a matter of fact, they don't want you even to double list items. If you have two items that are exactly the same, they will cancel one of them and say, you already got one of these up. So they are not on the item count like they used to be. And so that's why they are doing this stuff. That's why they have the subcategories. That's why they have the description box that we will discuss in a moment. And I will say it's totally useless. There's a lot of things like that.
Well, not only that, if you have two items that are exactly identical, there is a space for you to actually do a Dutch auction where you can say, well, I have 10 of these. And so, like, you go to the – you go buy your Peanuts press sheet and you cut it up into eight little imperf panes. Now you have eight items to sell and you – one listing and it says you have eight available. And then it allows you to put that listing up, and that listing stays up until all eight of them are sold or until your listing expires.
Okay, so the next big category, this one is super important for sellers, is pictures. You are allowed up to 12 pictures for free, which didn't always used to be the case. I remember having to pay for extra ones a long time ago.
Yeah, and then you make little macros so you could put up more. There's a guy named Noble Spirit. I don't know who he is. I've never met him. Hopefully he listens to the podcast and he'll drop us an email or something. But Noble Spirit would have a he'd make a page that he'd attach to the bottom, and he'd have 50, 60 pictures of a collection, which is what you have to have to sell a collection. And he would just have this attachment, and it would have, you know, sometimes 100 pictures in it of an entire collection. Fantastic.
Yeah, I know who it is.
Oh, you know who it is. You tell me later.
So eBay does have a one-picture minimum. You are not allowed to post something without at least some sort of image there. But please, for all intents and purposes, try to use up as many of those slots as you can. It doesn't cost you anything, and the more pictures you have, the better they are. The more likely the chance is somebody's going to grab the item because they're going to trust what they're seeing more than just some blurry image taken with a cell phone camera from a distance of 6 feet in poor lighting.
Again, for listing philatelic items, you're not going to use a camera.
No.
You're going to use a scanner.
Yeah, you want to use high-resolution scans, absolutely, because a camera will just cause problems. You can't enlarge it correctly to see detail.
You don't want to use too high a resolution. I don't know what Kaz uses, but I use 300 DPI. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a compromise between size and viewability.
I honestly don't care what the DPI is. I just care whether it's there or not, because a person will be able to see the stamp and decide whether he wants it. But you have to have a picture.
Yeah, the 300 DPI Scott's talking about, that's pretty much close to the standard, what it comes out of the box, if you just hit the scan button, what it's going to shoot out. So that's usually pretty acceptable. Just the point is, don't use camera pictures with stamps. It never works out well.
Never, 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 never.
They will actually boot your pictures if they're low resolution. So
yes.
We can't post this, it's too low.
Oh, that's right.
Resolution.
Yes. Yep, there's a warning that will come up if it's too small.
Or if the pixel size of the picture is too small as well, which you run into a lot of times with smaller stamps, is you either have to have them on a large board, you have to have something to make it larger. And one of the ways is to take a higher resolution scan, and another way is just to crop it with a huge border.
I've seen that. I saw a guy that would use a cell phone to take pictures of his stamps, and the picture was covering a 3-foot by 3-foot area of a white table. And the stamps were like a millimeter high in the picture.
Yeah.
So avoid doing that. Close-ups. Use scans anytime you possibly can of the front and the back, especially the more expensive the item it is, the more you want to lend towards scanning the back of the item as well. Especially, there's no excuse if it's a single stamp by itself.
And here's what Noble Spirit did again, which I really like. He knew his stuff, is he made a logo. Mm-hmm. So he may only have one picture in the gallery, and it would be his Noble Spirit logo.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd click on the description, and you'd see, 100 pictures, which is another great thing. It shows one picture in the gallery when you're scanning through stuff. If you're selling, let's say you're selling Scott's number 500, 501, and 503, which I'm just making numbers up. And you scanned them each individually, and so you have one picture up. So they see these Scott number 500. They will think that it's only one stamp. So I put in the title three pictures in really big capitals. So they know that this one picture is what they're looking at, but there's two more pictures to look at.
Well, you can also, for your first, that's a good point. Also, the first picture that you upload that's ordered first in the list is going to be the one everybody sees. In that situation, you can also take a little group photo or a group scan of the items, and that's the first thing people will see, and that way that also helps convey the point that there's more than one in there.
Well, another thing as a seller is you also need to your time for scanning and listing and all of that is worth something. You don't want to spend a whole lot of time trying to get extra images that really won't enhance your saleability of your item anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you how I do it because, I'm a high production guy. And by the way, there's a lot of people out there who say, I cannot list an item unless it sells for more than $50 because it's not worth my time. I love you guys. Thank you very much because you never go on eBay. I sell stuff for $10 and I've got a system down where, out of $10, I'll make $5 or $6. And you'll sell your $50 item and make $5 or $6. So have a nice day. What I do is I put it all on pages and then I give it to somebody else to scan. I haven't even lotted it. I just have a whole bunch of stamps, put them on pages, ship them off to, if everybody listened to the earlier ones, Tom was my scanner. And he would give me, 500 scans. Then I'd get them back. And when I got them back, then I'd figure out what I wanted to lot it. And so I'd take these and these and these and throw them all together. And that's a lot. Boom, gone. And then I'd take this one and this individual item and gone. So I scan them before they're lotted. That gives me a really, really fast way of listing, but it makes it a little more difficult for the buyers. And so I have to do something to correct that. And what I do to correct that is I put the description in the title more than a normal person would because, like I said, I may have three or four pictures and only one picture is showing up.
Okay, so the next section, which is incredibly important, this used to be called item description, I remember from selling before. Since they added that useless, quote, description section higher on the listing page, this one is now called details. Details is the main body paragraph. I really don't think there's any sort of character limit on it. Details is where you're going to put all of your stuff. You can go any direction you want. There's a lot of people that will just put a simple little couple of sentences of text description. Then you've got the guys that have six digits in how many items they've sold that pay people to do actual HTML script for them in this box instead to give them sort of a snazzier look. Or like what Kaz was talking about before, there are sellers who are selling collections and they can't simply just use 12 pictures for a collection. So they will have somebody do HTML for them so that it sends you somewhere else, it makes a connection between the eBay page and a collection of gallery pictures so that you can see 60, 100, 120 pictures for an item. So it's going to be as simple or as complex as you want to make it, but you at least need to state in the details section, the details of the item. That's where you want to talk about any sort of faults that it might have, what you think the come condition might be.
Yeah, if I can interrupt, do not put in the title whether or not your stamp has faults. Put it in the description category.
Oh, yeah, because that's going to be a quick turnoff.
Everybody will turn it off and not look. It could be a fantastic looking stamp, and you say, faults or whatever. I will say never hinged, lightly hinged, unused, and unused will be no gum. And then I'll describe it down below. And I will put, generally speaking, no faults, or I'll list out the faults. But generally speaking, I won't list the faults. I'll just say faults or small faults. I'll either say small faults, faults, or no faults, and then have you look at the picture.
That's a good way to do it, too, because what you put in the details description, you can be held liable for. If the buyer comes back later with a complaint going, oh, well, it's got a crease and you didn't say anything about it, or it's got a crease and you said it was this size and I think it's much bigger you can be held responsible for that. So the way you do it is perfect. If you just say that it has small faults or faults, then it's like, okay, yeah, there's things wrong with it, but nobody can really nail you down to cause grief later on.
And again, also, a lot of times I'll put stuff with certificates, and the certificates will, you know, they get very detailed into what the faults are. The second thing I do in the description, and this requires programming, is I put a picture. I put two pictures. One of them is a little standee that's out in front of a bar, and the other one is a lizard flicking its tail and eating a fly. And the reason that I do it is because when you look at my listings, you recognize them. Now, I could have, you know, a stamp that says Cash on it or something like that. As a matter of fact, that is my logo, but it's hidden. But it doesn't draw people's attention. I strongly suggest to everybody, and only half the people take the advice, put something in your description so when they look at it, they recognize it. Now, a lot of people will put a border around it. And the border, I mean, when you look at Gary Posner's listings or when you look at Bill Lang's listings, you're not going to confuse them. They're going to stand out and go, boom, this is Bill Lang's description. This is what they all look like. And so you know who you're dealing with. It's very, very important on the internet to get brand recognition. Now, if you're just selling 10 items, you may not care. If you're selling 1,000 items, believe me, you care.
What does the beer standee read again?
It's a little standee that's in front of a bar, and it says, we have 999 happy customers and one pain in the ass. You know, and then on the bottom it says, you know who you are.
I like it.
Another thing I do for the for that details description box is I'll put the title of my auction. That's the first thing in there. So you have it up at the top, and then you also have it in the body of the listing. And then what I'll do is I'll actually go down there and write that first, and then I'll cut and paste it up into the title so that it's exactly as it appears. And that way it provides consistency through the listing as well.
Well, see, for me, though, I use a listing program, which, you know, we're not going to get into, but I use 6-bit. Check it out. It's the best one that I found. Aptiva is all I have good, too. But that's the one I don't use.
I use Aptiva.
There's a lot of them.
Are they paid or not?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. And what I do is, because I get this stuff in bulk, I'm interested in listing a lot of stuff quickly. And Donald Vouch, you know, I may work 3 or 4 hours and I'll put up 600 lots.
Good Lord.
And that's because I'm just cutting and pasting. I'm not putting these descriptions in it. That's why I use faults, light faults, or no faults. Because I don't want to sit there and type. I'm not a fast typist. So I bang this stuff out, and that allows me to be cheap. If it took me an hour to put up a listing, then let's say I want to make $30 an hour. I would take the cost of the stamp, and I'd add $30 to it. But instead, if it's taking me like 3 minutes, I'm adding, you know, maybe $1 to the cost of the item, and the people are saving a lot of money. And I, generally speaking, am the cheapest stuff. If you pull up everything, mine is generally down at the bottom of the scale of how expensive it is. I make it up by volume.
That makes a lot of sense, too, because I've never used something like 6-bit before. And my maximum fastest, when I know what I'm doing, I've got all the crap laid out, I can do about 15 listings an hour. So it takes 4 or 5 minutes a piece at that rate. You're saying you do more than that by almost a factor of 10.
Oh, yeah.
I've always wondered how people do that. Yeah. That's crazy. Another thing I was going to say, too, we were talking about coding with the HTML. It can be worth it. You can take 20 minutes Google searching online how to do just a little snippet of HTML code to point towards an image like Cash is talking about. And there are services that you can also get that are anywhere from free, which you can find by Google search, to paid for $1 or $2 per template, where they will generate a big, gigantic, massive block of HTML code that will make your listing look all neat and pretty and tidy. And it'll just have little points in there that says, put your info for this here, put this info in here. And then you go to preview it, and it just looks really snazzy. So there's different levels of doing it.
Yeah, and it's just cutting and pasting.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Yeah.
At all. Okay, so we were going to talk about also one thing that the seller has to look at that's a little different in coming to terms with a decision is you have to understand the different buying formats. There is auction versus buy it now, and there is also a best offer function built into those as well, in which each one of those situations is going to be pertinent and appropriate and what you can benefit from them. I'll start with the one that I like the most, that we tend to use most often. We go ahead and list almost everything we have as buy it now or best offer. So what that means is, let's say we have an item we want to sell for $100. We put a buy it now value of $100 on it. We figure we're probably not going to get that, though. So we will put or best offer in there.
Wait. If you know you get it, right away you know you've listed it for too little.
That's a good point. We did that early on, too. Yeah, if somebody grabs it instantly, it was too little. So with the best offer function, there are presets that you can build in, because we get idiots when we post something for $100, it'll offer us a dollar just to be jerks.
Oh, yeah. I get those, too.
There's ways to filter them out. You can set your percentage threshold so you're not getting bottom-ended all the time. But when you receive an offer, what somebody has done is they put in what they think that item is worth and what they're willing to pay. That offer goes to you. You're given a chance to review it. You can either accept or reject or make a counter offer. Those are pretty self-explanatory what those do. And you have a chance. You can make three counter offers, and the buyer can make three primary offers. Once those have all been used, then it just goes back to buy it now, and they don't have any other options. But generally what happens for us is we'll have it up for buy it now for $100. Somebody will best offer me 60. I say, okay, well, how about 85? And he says, okay, well, how about 75? And I go, sold. So it's fun also in the sense that it builds in a little bit of that feeling from a show too, being able to sit there and negotiate with the person selling the item. So that's our favorite format. What do you guys use, and what do you think? How do you use the auction format? What's that good for?
I changed about a year and a half ago. A year and a half ago, all my stamps were auctions. Mm-hmm. I did nothing but auctions. Everything I put up expired in a week.
It was cheaper, mm-hmm. too, right?
Auctions, no, it was cheaper? The same. Yeah. It's actually the same price.
Okay.
But the when I went over the numbers, and Brian helped me go over the numbers, and I found out that the way I was doing it was good, but I was paying an incredibly high percentage for the non-sales.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting up into 17-18%. Now I put up more items, and I put them up for buy it nows. Now, when I first list the item, I don't know what it's worth. Generally speaking, if people ask me how much is this stamp worth, and I tell them, I'll tell you exactly how much the stamp is worth after you sell it. Because you have no clue. So I will list it first as an auction. And then after that, I know, okay, it didn't sell for $10. I'll put it up for buy it now for $10 and make me an offer. I always get offers, it seems like. About half the time, it seems like the people give me an offer as opposed to buying it now. And it's ridiculous sometimes. I'll have a stamp up for $4 and they'll send me a buy it now for $3.75. And of course I'm going to, take it. But they did all this to try to get an extra quarter, and it's like, hey, if that's the way you roll, have a ball. I want you to enjoy your experience, and if the negotiations make you happy, by all means, do it.
Hey, an ego stroke only costs 25 cents. That's pretty cheap.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I get people who, a lot of times they'll say they'll make me a bunch of offers, and they'll say, the reason I'm, they'll send a little note, say, I sent you an offer on 6 items. Please accept them, And I go, well, if you're buying 6 items, yeah, I'll accept them,
It's
a 15%, 20%, 25% discount. I mean, I've accepted buyouts, 1/3 off, but you know, sometimes I'll get them half off, and then you sit there and go, eh. And then like I got an offer. I had duck stamps, and it was $1,000 face value of duck stamps.
Good grief!
And I had them up for $600, 60% a face, and a person offered me $125. And it's I don't even decline those offers. It's not even worth my time to click.
Yeah, those are the trolls I was talking about. That's why we always set a minimum threshold of like 50%, just because we're a little smarter than that. We're not exorbitant in where we set our prices. I just don't want to deal with those guys. I don't even want to see them.
I think they're hoping that you're not looking and you go ahead and accept it. You know, you accidentally click to accept.
You think they're paying $1,000.
But even if I accidentally clicked, and then I get $125, I pull the $1,000 item out in my hand, I'm going to sit here and go, dude, I am not selling this to you for $125, and I'm going to cancel the sale, and you're going to give me a negative. And it's like, hey, okay, we're both done.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to, you know, do that. If I make a mistake, you know, you can go ahead and give me a negative, which we'll discuss later. I don't care. I'm not giving you, you know, $500 off an item.
I think the only time using an actual auction for stamps would really be appropriate anymore is if you really do have kind of a unique one-of-a-kind item. If you've got, you know, a U.S. 240 and there's a billion of them that you're competing with, an auction for just that single item might not be the best idea. But like Jessica said, it can work really well for a mixed lot, see what somebody will pay.
I think, no, because that's not even true. I play Warhammer, and my kids are into it. They play Warhammer 40K. And we were going through it, and it was actually a pain in the ass to look at the auctions. It was easier to go to the buy it nows and make counteroffers when I needed to make a counteroffer. Mm-hmm. The auctions are like the excitement of the auction, but eBay's been out there for almost 20 years. That thrill of the auction is kind of gone. Now they just want to buy the item. Yeah. And so auctions are great, like I said, when you don't know what it's worth.
Well, one of the things I do is, say I have an item that's $100. I know it's the value of it's $100, but I got a great deal on it and I paid $40. Okay, so my buy it now is at $100, but in my settings, I know I'm going to accept less, and I might go in and say, okay, well, just automatically accept anything over $70.
That's right.
You know, that gives me a little bit of a profit margin. It gives somebody, you know, whoever makes the offer, they feel like they're getting a great deal, and you know, if they offer me $95. Hey, it's ecstatic. A bonus for me.
Yeah.
And well, if they offer me only 70, hey, I still made enough money to cover my time and expense on it. And you guys got a great deal. Happy everybody around.
Scott and me both bought a bunch of duck stamps. And they had a $180 catalog value.
Yeah, they still do.
And we paid like $50. And I put in my description, you know, this is $180. And I put in my description, I paid $50 for these. I got a great deal. Give me a $20 profit. Mm-hmm. And so I put them up for $70. And people wrote back and, you know, they offered me like $60. You know, like, I only want to give you $10, not $20.
I had people offer me
$40. Trolls. Did I not just tell you? Good grief.
So you expect me to sell it at a loss?
Yeah, when I made a great deal. I made this great deal for like 1/3 of catalog.
And on top of that, pay all the fees?
Yeah, and then pay all the fees on top of it, yeah.
So I could get into auction formats, but if you've been listening, as you can tell, we really don't care.
Yeah.
If you want to learn more about auctions, go look them up. They can be useful, but not so much anymore.
Here's the only thing that I'll add to that is on eBay, and this is statistical, Wednesday and Thursday are their worst days.
Yes.
And Sunday is their best.
If you're going to run an auction, schedule it so that it ends Sunday at what is it? Is it in the morning or the evening? I don't remember.
Anytime. I don't think they break it down.
by there's 10 p.m. Eastern.
Well, you got to remember
worldwide anyway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you're selling U.S. stamps, your target audience is more than likely going to be U.S. collectors, right? Because whatever country you live in, that's typically your primary collecting area. And so, if you're selling U.S., you have to take into consideration this is football season. The Sunday night people who are going to be on eBay are going to watch the football game first, and then they're going to go on eBay. So if you don't want it to be ending at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time, that's prime football time.
And you're going to lose customers. Yeah, just if you're doing an auction, have it end like between 8 and 10 p.m. Eastern time.
Well, actually, my favorite, and I do this every year, is on December 19th, I list every single thing I have for an auction.
Okay.
And I have the auction end on December 26th.
Oh, gotcha.
Because on December 26th, nobody is doing anything.
Everybody's sitting at home on their computers.
And so, it used to be their brand new computers.
Flush with cash from their Christmas gifts.
Exactly.
Oh, good point. So one quick thing, it is incredibly important, but it is fast, is to understand how much you are going to pay eBay for selling things. It's going to come directly out of what the buyer pays you, 100% out of your pocket. The breakdown is very simple. It's your insertion fees, whatever that is, plus 10% for eBay and 3% for PayPal. So you're going to pay around 13 to 14% of whatever you're selling your item for.
Plus 35%. Or I'm sorry, plus 35 cents. PayPal charges you 35 cents
per transaction. Oh, yes, plus 3%. So, yeah.
Yeah, 35 cents plus 3%. That 35 cents makes a big difference.
Yeah, if you're selling an item for a dollar, that 35 cents is huge.
Yeah, if you give free shipping on a dollar item, mm-hmm. you have given the item away for free.
That's true. Okay, so to amend that, insertion fees plus 10% for eBay and 3% plus 35 cents for each item through PayPal.
For me, and again, I've been on a long time, my fees, because everything doesn't sell, I sell, generally speaking, between 20 and 30% of the stuff that I put up. And a lot of times it's less. In the summertime, it'll drop by half. I may sell 15 to 20%. My eBay fees will run 17% to 20%. With I'll pay eBay and everybody like 13 or 14%. And then all this, I have to pay for all the stuff that didn't sell. So it's about, you know, sometimes I get up into the 20% range.
Yeah, eBay doesn't charge you the final value fee, which is the after fee after it sells if it doesn't sell, but they will still assess those insertion fees.
Yep.
But they also have to pay for those.
They also offer a relist at no charge if it sells.
Which I found is valueless.
Well, I don't think so, because if you have, let's say you're doing a buy it now and you set it for 30 days and then you use the free relist option on top of that, you've got 60 days for listing one item for one price versus let's say you try to sell something as an auction and you do it 7 days at a time repeatedly over that same period, you're going to spend a crap load more doing it as an auction than you are buy it now and relisting.
But here's the difference. Here's the difference. If you're only going to sell 10 items on eBay, yes, it's a great feature. But if you have hundreds of listings, or in Cash's case, thousands of listings, you're going to want to buy a store. And your listing fees are going to be free for a minimum number of listings.
Yeah.
So you don't really care, other than you're being charged for two listings instead of one listing. Yeah. They're all free. So I think Cash has, 1,000 free listings a month?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's listing 2,000 items a month, you know, he still doesn't really care because his listing fee is only 10 cents.
But more than that, depending on the format that you're using to list, when you list an item, you have to figure out where it is. When you relist the item, they give you a new lot number, so you have to renumber that item. Inventory control comes into play.
Mm.
And inventory control is the pain in the ass that you're going to hit if you do not use Octiva or 6bit or something. And so there are some negatives and pluses. But anyway, that's sort of off the topic. Just expect to spend about 15% and It's cheaper than the auctions, but you don't get as much money either.
So would you say there's a threshold, like if you're going to have, since the store costs, what, $20 a month, that if you're going to have more than $20 a month in listing fees, just the insertion fees, you should go ahead and get a store?
Yeah, do the math. It's just a math thing.
Numbers.
Yeah, figure out how much you pay without the store, figure out how much you pay with the store.
I mean, approach it like a business. Even if it's not a business, approach it like a business and figure out the numbers.
Yeah, look at what's going to cost you less in the long run.
I mean, initially, you're probably not looking at being an eBay dealer, which means you're probably not going to want a store. But it's kind of addicting. So eventually, you're going to probably, step up and want a small store. And as your number of items grow, then you can move on to higher and higher levels in the store. I think there's 3 levels, right?
Yeah. You got to get rid of all those banker boxes you have stashed in the corner because you bought it because you wanted 2 things out of each box. And now you got all this other stuff that you got to part out and get rid of to try to make your money back.
Okay, let's get a drum roll so we can open our Jenny sheets.
And I pull out the envelope and I look at the back.
Nothing.
So if you watch the video, or excuse me, the YouTube, you'll know why. As soon as you take it out, you know whether there's one inside or not.
Yep.
So what did we get?
$12 in postage.
Oh, they're not that bad. Come on.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook stampshowheretoday, and our website www.stampshowheretoday.com with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on a Google Voice answering machine anytime. Country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, this is Tom Mills, H.R. Harmer Stamp Auctions. You're listening to the podcast for Stamp Show Here Today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Address unknown. No such number.